Chapter 27 The Lightning-Struck Tower. Once back under the starry sky, Harry heaved Dumbledore onto the top of the nearest boulder and then to his feet. Sodden and shivering, Dumbledore's weight still upon him, Harry concentrated harder than he had ever done upon his destination. Hogsmeade. Closing his eyes, gripping Dumbledore's arm as tightly as he could, he stepped forwards into that feeling of horrible compression. He knew it had worked before he opened his eyes. The smell of salt, the sea breeze, had gone. He and Dumbledore were shivering and dripping in the middle of the dark high street in Hogsmeade. For one horrible moment, Harry's imagination showed him more inferi creeping towards him around the sides of shops, but he blinked and saw that nothing was stirring. All was still, the darkness complete but for a few street lamps and lit upper windows.
"We did it, Professor!" Harry whispered with difficulty.
He suddenly realized that he had a searing stitch in his chest.
"We did it! We got the Horcrux!"
Dumbledore staggered against him. For a moment, Harry thought that his inexpert apparition had thrown Dumbledore off balance. Then he saw his face, paler and damper than ever in the distant light of a street lamp.
"Sir, are you all right?"
"I've been better," said Dumbledore weakly, though the corners of his mouth twitched. "That potion was no health drink."
And to Harry's horror, Dumbledore sank onto the ground.
"Sir, it's okay, sir. You're going to be all right. Don't worry."
He looked around desperately for help, but there was nobody to be seen, and all he could think was that he must somehow get Dumbledore quickly to the hospital wing.
"We need to get you up to the school, sir. Madam Pomfrey."
"No," said Dumbledore. "It is Professor Snape whom I need, but I do not think I can walk very far just yet."
"Right. Sir, listen. I'm going to knock on a door, find a place you can stay. Then I can run and get Madam—"
"Severus," said Dumbledore clearly. "I need Severus."
"All right then, Snape, but I'm going to have to leave you for a moment so I can—"
Before Harry could make a move, however, he heard running footsteps. His heart leapt. Somebody had seen. Somebody knew they needed help. And looking around, he saw Madame Rosmerta scurrying down the dark street towards them on high-heeled, fluffy slippers, wearing a silk dressing gown embroidered with dragons.
"I saw you apparate as I was pulling my bedroom curtains. Thank goodness, thank goodness. I couldn't think what to—" "But what's wrong with Albus?"
She came to a halt, panting, and stared down wide-eyed at Dumbledore.
"He's hurt," said Harry. "Madame Rosmerta, can he come into the Three Broomsticks while I go up to the school and get help for him?" "You can't go up there alone. Don't you realize? Haven't you seen?" "If you help me support him," said Harry, not listening to her, "I think we can get him inside."
"What has happened?" asked Dumbledore. "Rosmerta, what's wrong?"
The dark mark, Albus."
And she pointed into the sky in the direction of Hogwarts. Dread flooded Harry at the sound of the words. He turned and looked. There it was, hanging in the sky above the school, the blazing green skull with a serpent tongue, the mark Death Eaters left behind whenever they had entered a building, wherever they had murdered.
"When did it appear?"
asked Dumbledore, and his hand clenched painfully upon Harry's shoulder as he struggled to his feet.
"Must have been minutes ago. It wasn't there when I put the cat out, but when I got upstairs—"
"We need to return to the castle at once," said Dumbledore. "Rosmerta,"
and though he staggered a little, he seemed wholly in command of the situation,
"we need transport. Brooms."
"I've got a couple behind the bar," she said, looking very frightened. "Shall I run and fetch?"
No, Harry can do it. Harry raised his wand at once. Axio Rosmerta's brooms! A second later they heard a loud bang as the front door of the pub burst open. Two brooms had shot out into the street and were racing each other to Harry's side, where they stopped dead, quivering slightly, at waist height.
Rosmerta, please send a message to the Ministry, said Dumbledore as he mounted the broom nearest him. It might be that nobody within Hogwarts has yet realized anything is wrong. Harry, put on your invisibility cloak.
Harry pulled his cloak out of his pocket and threw it over himself before mounting his broom. Madame Rosmerta was already tottering back towards her pub as Harry and Dumbledore kicked off from the ground and rose up into the air. As they sped towards the castle, Harry glanced sideways at Dumbledore, ready to grab him should he fall. But the sight of the dark mark seemed to have acted upon Dumbledore like a stimulant. He was bent low over his broom, his eyes fixed upon the mark, his long silver hair and beard flying behind him in the night air. And Harry, too, looked ahead at the skull, and fear swelled inside him like a venomous bubble, compressing his lungs, driving all other discomfort from his mind. How long had they been away? Had Ron, Hermione, and Ginny's luck run out by now? Was it one of them who had caused the mark to be set over the school? Or was it Neville, or Luna, or some other member of the D.A.? And if it was, he was the one who had told them to patrol the corridors. He had asked them to leave the safety of their beds. Would he be responsible again for the death of a friend? As they flew over the dark, twisting lane down which they had walked earlier, Harry heard, over the whistling of the night air in his ears, Dumbledore muttering in some strange language again. He thought he understood why, as he felt his broom shudder for a moment when they flew over the boundary wall into the grounds. Dumbledore was undoing the enchantments he himself had set around the castle so that they could enter at speed. The dark mark was glittering directly above the astronomy tower, the highest of the castle. Did that mean the death had occurred there? Dumbledore had already crossed the crenellated ramparts and was dismounting. Harry landed next to him seconds later and looked around. The ramparts were deserted. The door to the spiral staircase that led back into the castle was closed. There was no sign of a struggle, of a fight to the death, of a body. "What does it mean?" Harry asked Dumbledore, looking up at the green skull with its serpent's tongue glinting evilly above them. "Is it the real mark? Has someone definitely been... Professor?" In the dim green glow from the mark, Harry saw Dumbledore clutching at his chest with his blackened hand. "Go and wake Severus," said Dumbledore faintly but clearly. "Tell him what has happened, and bring him to me. Do nothing else. Speak to nobody else, and do not remove your cloak. I shall wait here." "But you swore to obey me, Harry. Go!" Harry hurried over to the door leading to the spiral staircase, but his hand had only just closed upon the iron ring of the door when he heard running footsteps on the other side. He looked round at Dumbledore, who gestured to him to retreat. Harry backed away, drawing his wand as he did so. The door burst open, and somebody erupted through it and shouted, "Expelliarmus!" Harry's body became instantly rigid and immobile, and he felt himself fall back against the tower wall, propped like an unsteady statue, unable to move or speak. He could not understand how it had happened. Expelliarmus was not a freezing charm. Then, by the light of the mark, he saw Dumbledore's wand flying in an arc over the edge of the ramparts, and understood. Dumbledore had wordlessly immobilized Harry, and the second he had taken to perform the spell had cost him the chance of defending himself. standing against the ramparts, very white in the face. Dumbledore still showed no sign of panic or distress. He merely looked across at his disarmor and said, "Good evening, Draco." Malfoy stepped forwards, glancing around quickly to check that he and Dumbledore were alone. His eyes fell upon the second broom. "Who else is here?"
"A question I might ask you, or are you acting alone?"
Harry saw Malfoy's pale eyes shift back to Dumbledore in the greenish glare of the mark.
"No," he said, "I've got backup. There are Death Eaters here in your school tonight."
"Well, well," said Dumbledore, as though Malfoy was showing him an ambitious homework project.
"Very good indeed. You found a way to let them in, did you?"
"Yeah," said Malfoy, who was panting, "right under your nose, and you never realized."
"Ingenious," said Dumbledore. "Yet, forgive me, where are they now? You seem unsupported."
"They met some of your guard. They're having a fight down below. They won't be long. I came on ahead. I've got a job to do."
"Well, then, you must get on and do it, my dear boy," said Dumbledore softly.
There was silence. Harry stood imprisoned within his own invisible, paralysed body, staring at the two of them, his ears straining to hear sounds of the Death Eaters' distant fight, and in front of him Draco Malfoy did nothing but stare at Albus Dumbledore, who, incredibly, smiled.
"Draco, Draco, you are not a killer."
"How do you know?" said Malfoy at once.
He seemed to realize how childish the words had sounded. Harry saw him flush in the mark's greenish light.
"You don't know what I'm capable of," said Malfoy more forcefully. "You don't know what I've done."
"Oh, yes, I do," said Dumbledore mildly. "You almost killed Katie Bell and Ronald Weasley. You have been trying, with increasing desperation, to kill me all year. Forgive me, Draco, but they have been feeble attempts. So feeble, to be honest, that I wonder whether your heart has really been in it."
"It has been in it," said Malfoy vehemently. "I've been working on it all year, and tonight—"
Somewhere in the depths of the castle below, Harry heard a muffled yell. Malfoy stiffened and glanced over his shoulder.
"Somebody is putting up a good fight," said Dumbledore conversationally. "But you were saying, yes, you have managed to introduce Death Eaters into my school, which I admit I thought impossible. How did you do it?"
But Malfoy said nothing. He was still listening to whatever was happening below, and seemed almost as paralysed as Harry was.
"Perhaps you ought to get on with the job alone," suggested Dumbledore. "What if your backup has been thwarted by my guard? As you have perhaps realised, there are members of the Order of the Phoenix here tonight, too. And after all, you don't really need help. I have no wand at the moment. I cannot defend myself."
Malfoy merely stared at him.
"I see,"
said Dumbledore kindly, when Malfoy neither moved nor spoke.
"You are afraid to act until they join you."
"I am not afraid," snarled Malfoy, though he still made no move to hurt Dumbledore. "It's you who should be scared."
"But why?" "I don't think you will kill me, Draco. Killing is not nearly as easy as the innocent believe. So tell me, while we wait for your friends, how did you smuggle them in here? It seems to have taken you a long time to work out how to do it."
Malfoy looked as though he was fighting down the urge to shout or to vomit. He gulped and took several deep breaths, glaring at Dumbledore, his wand pointing directly at the latter's heart. Then, as though he could not help himself, he said, "I had to mend that broken vanishing cabinet that no one's used for years, the one Montague got lost in last year."
"'Ah!'
Dumbledore's sigh was half a groan. He closed his eyes for a moment. "'That was clever. There is a pair, I take it?'
"'The other's in Borgin and Burks,' said Malfoy, "'and they make a kind of passage between them. "'Montague told me that when he was stuck in the Hogwarts one "'he was trapped in limbo, "'that sometimes he could hear what was going on at school "'and sometimes what was going on in the shop, "'as if the cabinet was travelling between them, "'but he couldn't make anyone hear him. "'In the end he managed to apparate out, "'even though he'd never passed his test. "'He nearly died doing it. "'Everyone thought it was a really good story, "'but I was the only one who realised what it meant. "'Even Borgin didn't know.' I was the one who realised there could be a way into Hogwarts through the cabinets if I fixed the broken one.
Very good, murmured Dumbledore. So the Death Eaters were able to pass from Borgin and Burks into the school to help you. A clever plan, a very clever plan. And as you say, right under my nose.
Yeah. "'Said Malfoy, who bizarrely seemed to draw courage and comfort from Dumbledore's praise. "'Yeah, it was.'
"'But there were times,' Dumbledore went on, "'weren't there, when you were not sure you would succeed in mending the cabinet, "'and you resorted to crude and badly judged measures, "'such as sending me a cursed necklace that was bound to reach the wrong hands, "'poisoning mead there was only the slightest chance I might drink.'
"'Yeah, well, you still didn't realise who was behind that stuff, did you?' sneered Malfoy, as Dumbledore slid a little down the ramparts, the strength in his legs apparently fading, and Harry struggled fruitlessly, mutely, against the enchantment binding him.
"'As a matter of fact, I did,' said Dumbledore. "'I was sure it was you.'
"'Why didn't you stop me, then?' Malfoy demanded.
"'I tried, Draco.' "'Professor Snape has been keeping watch over you on my orders.'
"'He hasn't been doing your orders. "'He promised my mother—'
"'Of course that is what he would tell you, Draco. "'But
he's a double agent, you stupid old man. "'He isn't working for you. "'You just think he is.'
"'We must agree to differ on that, Draco. "'It so happens that I trust Professor Snape.'
"'Well, you're losing your grip, then,' sneered Malfoy. "'He's been offering me plenty of help, "'wanting all the glory for himself, wanting a bit of the action. "'What are you doing? Did you do the necklace? "'That was stupid. It could have blown everything. "'But I haven't told him what I've been doing in the Room of Requirement. "'He's going to wake up tomorrow, and it'll all be over, "'and he won't be the Dark Lord's favourite any more. "'He'll be nothing compared to me. Nothing!'
"'Very gratifying,' said Dumbledore mildly. "'We all like appreciation for our own hard work, of course. "'But you must have had an accomplice all the same, "'someone in Hogsmeade, "'someone who was able to slip Katie the—the—'
"'Ah!'
"'Dumbledore closed his eyes again and nodded, "'as though he was about to fall asleep. "'Of course, Rose Murta. "'How long has she been under the Imperious Curse?'
"'Got there at last, have you?' Malfoy taunted.
"'There was another yell from below, rather louder than the last. "'Malfoy looked nervously over his shoulder again, "'then back at Dumbledore, who went on, "'So poor Rose Murta was forced to lurk in her own bathroom "'and pass that necklace to any Hogwarts student "'who entered the room unaccompanied.' And the poisoned mead? Well, naturally, Rose Murta was able to poison it for you before she sent the bottle to Slughorn, believing that it was to be my Christmas present. Yes, very neat, very neat. Poor Mr. Filch would not, of course, think to check a bottle of Rose Murta's. Tell me, how have you been communicating with Rose Murta? I thought we had all methods of communication in and out of the school monitored.
"'Enchanted coins,' said Malfoy, as though he was compelled to keep talking, though his wand hand was shaking badly. "'I had one, and she had the other, and I could send her messages.
"'Isn't that the secret method of communication the group that called themselves Dumbledore's Army used last year?' asked Dumbledore. His voice was light and conversational, but Harry saw him slip an inch lower down the wall as he said it.
"Yeah, I got the idea from them," said Malfoy with a twisted smile. "I got the idea of poisoning the mead from the mudblood Granger as well. I heard her talking in the library about Filch not recognizing potions."
"Please do not use that offensive word in front of me," said Dumbledore.
Malfoy gave a harsh laugh. "You care about me saying mudblood when I'm about to kill you?"
"Yes, I do," said Dumbledore, and Harry saw his feet slide a little on the floor as he struggled to remain upright.
"But as for being about to kill me, Draco, you have had several long minutes now. We are quite alone. I am more defenceless than you can have dreamed of finding me, and still you have not acted."
Malfoy's mouth contorted involuntarily, as though he had tasted something very bitter.
"Now, about tonight," Dumbledore went on, "I am a little puzzled about how it happened. You knew that I had left the school?"
"But of course," he answered his own question. "Rosmerta saw me leaving. She tipped you off using your ingenious coins, I'm sure."
"That's right," said Malfoy. "But she said you were just going for a drink. You'd be back."
"Well, I certainly did have a drink, and I came back. After a fashion," mumbled Dumbledore.
"So you decided to spring a trap for me?"
"We decided to put the dark mark over the tower and get you to hurry up here to see who'd been killed," said Malfoy, "and it worked."
"Well, yes and no," said Dumbledore. "But am I to take it then that nobody has been murdered?"
"Someone's dead," said Malfoy, and his voice seemed to go up an octave as he said it.
"One of your people. I don't know who. It was dark. I stepped over the body. I was supposed to be waiting up here when you got back, only your phoenix lot got in the way."
"Yes, they do that," said Dumbledore. There was a bang and shouts from below, louder than ever. It sounded as though people were fighting on the actual spiral staircase that led to where Dumbledore, Malfoy, and Harry stood. And Harry's heart thundered unheard in his invisible chest. Someone was dead. Malfoy had stepped over the body. But who was it?
"There is little time, one way or another," said Dumbledore. "So let us discuss your options, Draco."
"My options?" said Malfoy loudly. "I'm standing here with a wand. I'm about to kill you."
"My dear boy, let us have no more pretense about that. If you were going to kill me, you would have done it when you first disarmed me. You would not have stopped for this pleasant chat about ways and means."
"I haven't got any options," said Malfoy, and he was suddenly as white as Dumbledore. "I've got to do it. He'll kill me. He'll kill my whole family."
"I appreciate the difficulty of your position," said Dumbledore. "Why else do you think I have not confronted you before now?" "Because I knew that you would have been murdered if Lord Voldemort realized that I suspected you."
Malfoy winced at the sound of the name.
"I did not dare speak to you of the mission with which I knew you had been entrusted, in case he used legilimency against you," continued Dumbledore. "But now at last we can speak plainly to each other. No harm has been done. You have hurt nobody, though you are very lucky that your unintentional victim survived." "I can help you, Draco."
"No, you can't," said Malfoy, his wand hand shaking very badly indeed. "Nobody can. He told me to do it, or he'll kill me. I've got no choice."
"Come over to the right side, Draco, and we can hide you more completely than you can possibly imagine. What is more, I can send members of the Order to your mother tonight to hide her likewise. Your father is safe at the moment in Azkaban. When the time comes, we can protect him too." Come over to the right side, Draco. You are not a killer.
Malfoy stared at Dumbledore. But I got this far, didn't I? He said slowly. They thought I'd die in the attempt, but I'm here, and you're in my power. I'm the one with the wand. You're at my mercy.
No, Draco, said Dumbledore quietly. It is my mercy, and not yours, that matters now.
Malfoy did not speak. His mouth was open, his wand hand still trembling. Harry thought he saw it drop by a fraction. But suddenly footsteps were thundering up the stairs, and a second later Malfoy was buffeted out of the way as four people in black robes burst through the door onto the ramparts. Still paralysed, his eyes staring unblinkingly, Harry gazed in terror upon four strangers. It seemed the Death Eaters had won the fight below. A lumpy-looking man with an odd, lopsided leer gave a wheezy giggle.
"Dumbledore cornered!" he said, and he turned to a stocky little woman who looked as though she could be his sister and who was grinning eagerly. "Dumbledore wandless! Dumbledore alone! Well done, Draco! Well done!"
"Good evening, Amicus," said Dumbledore calmly, as though welcoming the man to a tea party. "And you've brought Alecto, too. Charming." The woman gave an angry little titter.
"Think your little jokes will help you on your deathbed, then?" she jeered.
"Jokes? No, no, these are manners," replied Dumbledore.
"Do it," said the stranger standing nearest to Harry, a big rangy man with matted grey hair and whiskers, whose black Death Eater's robes looked uncomfortably tight. He had a voice like none that Harry had ever heard, a rasping bark of a voice. Harry could smell a powerful mixture of dirt, sweat, and, unmistakably, of blood coming from him. His filthy hands had long yellowish nails.
"Is that you, Fenrir?" asked Dumbledore.
"That's right," rasped the other. "Pleased to see me, Dumbledore?"
"No, I cannot say that I am." Fenrir Greyback grinned, showing pointed teeth. Blood trickled down his chin, and he licked his lips slowly, obscenely.
"But you know how much I like kids, Dumbledore."
"Am I to take it that you are attacking even without the full moon now? This is most unusual. You have developed a taste for human flesh that cannot be satisfied once a month."
"That's right," said Greyback. "Shocks you, that, does it, Dumbledore? Frightens you?"
"Well, I cannot pretend it does not disgust me a little," said Dumbledore. "And, yes, I am a little shocked that Draco here invited you, of all people, into the school where his friends live."
"I didn't," breathed Malfoy.
He was not looking at Greyback. He did not seem to want to even glance at him. "I didn't know he was going to come."
"I wouldn't want to miss a trip to Hogwarts, Dumbledore," rasped Greyback. "Not when there are throats to be ripped out. Delicious, delicious!"
And he raised a yellow fingernail and picked at his front teeth, leering at Dumbledore.
"I could do you for afters, Dumbledore."
"No!" said the fourth Death Eater sharply. He had a heavy, brutal-looking face. "We've got orders. Draco's got to do it. Now, Draco, and quickly!" Malfoy was showing less resolution than ever. He looked terrified as he stared into Dumbledore's face, which was even paler and rather lower than usual as he had slid so far down the rampart wall.
"It's not long for this world anyway, if you ask me," said the lopsided man to the accompaniment of his sister's wheezing giggles. "Look at him! What's happened to you then, Dunby?"
"Oh, weaker resistance,"
"'Slower reflexes, Amicus,' said Dumbledore. "'Old age, in short. "'One day perhaps it will happen to you, if you're lucky.'
"'What's that mean, then? What's that mean?' "'yelled the Death Eater, suddenly violent. "'Always the same, weren't you, Dumby? "'Talking and doing nothing, nothing! "'I don't even know why the Dark Lord's bothering to kill you. "'Come on, Draco, do it!'
But at that moment there were renewed sounds of scuffling from below, and a voice shouted, "'They've blocked the stairs! Reducto! Reducto!' Harry's heart leapt. So these four had not eliminated all opposition, but merely broken through the fight to the top of the tower, and, by the sound of it, created a barrier behind them.
"'Now, Draco, quickly!'
said the brutal-faced man angrily. But Malfoy's hand was shaking so badly that he could barely aim.
"'I'll do it!' snarled Greyback, moving towards Dumbledore with his hands outstretched, his teeth bared. "'I said no!' shouted the brutal-faced man. There was a flash of light, and the werewolf was blasted out of the way. He hit the ramparts and staggered, looking furious. Harry's heart was hammering so hard it seemed impossible that nobody could hear him standing there, imprisoned by Dumbledore's spell. If he could only move, he could aim a curse from under the cloak.
"'Draco, do it, or stand aside so one of us!'
screeched the woman. But at that precise moment the door to the ramparts burst open once more, and there stood Snape, his wand clutched in his hand as his black eyes swept the scene, from Dumbledore slumped against the wall to the four Death Eaters, including the enraged werewolf and Malfoy.
"'We've got a problem, Snape,' said the lumpy Amicus, whose eyes and wand were fixed alike upon Dumbledore. "'The boy doesn't seem able—'
But somebody else had spoken Snape's name, quite softly.
"'Severus!'
The sound frightened Harry beyond anything he had experienced all evening. For the first time, Dumbledore was pleading. Snape said nothing, but walked forwards and pushed Malfoy roughly out of the way. The three Death Eaters fell back without a word. Even the werewolf seemed cowed. Snape gazed for a moment at Dumbledore, and there was revulsion and hatred etched in the harsh lines of his face.
"'Severus, please!'
Snape raised his wand and pointed it directly at Dumbledore.
"'Avada Kedavra!'
A jet of green light shot from the end of Snape's wand and hit Dumbledore squarely in the chest. Harry's scream of horror never left him. Silent and unmoving, he was forced to watch as Dumbledore was blasted into the air. For a split second, he seemed to hang suspended beneath the shining skull, and then he fell slowly backwards, like a great rag doll, over the battlements and out of sight. Chapter 28 Flight of the Prince. Harry felt as though he, too, were hurtling through space. It had not happened. It could not have happened.
"'Out of here, quickly!' said Snape.
He seized Malfoy by the scruff of the neck and forced him through the door ahead of the rest. Greyback and the squat brother and sister followed, the latter both panting excitedly. As they vanished through the door, Harry realized he could move again. What was holding him paralyzed against the wall was not magic, but horror and shock. He threw the invisibility cloak aside as the brutal-faced Death Eater, last to leave the tower top, was disappearing through the door.
"'Petrificus Totalus!'
The Death Eater buckled, as though hit in the back with something solid, and fell to the ground, rigid as a waxwork.
but he had barely hit the floor when Harry was clambering over him and running down the darkened staircase. Terror tore at Harry's heart. He had to get to Dumbledore, and he had to catch Snape. Somehow the two things were linked. He could reverse what had happened if he had them both together. Dumbledore could not have died. He leapt the last 10 steps of the spiral staircase and stopped where he landed, his wand raised. The dimly lit corridor was full of dust. Half the ceiling seemed to have fallen in, and a battle was raging before him. But even as he attempted to make out who was fighting whom, he heard the hated voice shout, "It's over! Time to go!" and saw Snape disappearing round the corner at the far end of the corridor. He and Malfoy seemed to have forced their way through the fight unscathed. As Harry plunged after them, one of the fighters detached themselves from the fray and flew at him. It was the werewolf, Greyback. He was on top of Harry before Harry could raise his wand. Harry fell backwards, with filthy, matted hair in his face, the stench of sweat and blood filling his nose and mouth, hot, greedy breath at his throat. "Petrificus totalus!" Harry felt Greyback collapse against him. With a stupendous effort, he pushed the werewolf off and onto the floor as a jet of green light came flying towards him. He ducked and ran, head first, into the fight. His feet met something squashy and slippery on the floor, and he stumbled. There were two bodies lying there, lying face down in a pool of blood. But there was no time to investigate. Harry now saw red hair flying like flames in front of him. Ginny was locked in combat with the lumpy Death Eater, Amicus, who was throwing hex after hex at her while she dodged them. Amicus was giggling, enjoying the sport.
"Crucio! Crucio! You can't dance forever, pretty! Impedimenta!"
yelled Harry. His jinx hit Amicus in the chest. He gave a pig-like squeal of pain, was lifted off his feet, and slammed into the opposite wall, slid down it, and fell out of sight behind Ron, Professor McGonagall, and Lupin, each of whom was battling a separate Death Eater. Beyond them, Harry saw Tonks fighting an enormous blonde wizard who was sending curses flying in all directions so that they ricocheted off the walls around them, cracking stone, shattering the nearest window.
"Harry, where did you come from?"
Ginny cried, but there was no time to answer her. He put his head down and sprinted forwards, narrowly avoiding a blast that erupted over his head, showering them all in bits of wall. Snape must not escape. He must catch up with Snape.
"Take that!"
shouted Professor McGonagall, and Harry glimpsed the female Death Eater Alecto sprinting away down the corridor with her arms over her head, her brother right behind her. Harry launched himself after them, but his foot caught on something, and next moment he was lying across someone's legs. Looking around, he saw Neville's pale, round face flat against the floor.
"Neville, are you more right?"
muttered Neville, who was clutching his stomach.
"Harry, Snape and Malfoy ran past."
"I know, I'm on it," said Harry, aiming a hex from the floor at the enormous blonde Death Eater who was causing most of the chaos. The man gave a howl of pain as the spell hit him in the face. He wheeled round, staggered, and then pounded away after the brother and sister. Harry scrambled up from the floor and began to sprint along the corridor, ignoring the bangs issuing from behind him, the yells of the others to come back, and the mute call of the figures on the ground, whose fate he did not yet know. He skidded round the corner, his trainers slippery with blood. Snape had an immense head start. Was it possible that he had already entered the cabinet in the Room of Requirement, or had the Order made steps to secure it, to prevent the Death Eaters retreating that way? He could hear nothing but his own pounding feet, his own hammering heart, as he sprinted along the next empty corridor, but then spotted a bloody footprint, which showed that at least one of the fleeing Death Eaters was heading towards the front doors, Perhaps the room of requirement was indeed blocked. He skidded round another corner, and a curse flew past him. He dived behind a suit of armour which exploded. He saw the brother and sister Death Eaters running down the marble staircase ahead and aimed jinxes at them, but merely hit several bewigged witches in a portrait on the landing who ran screeching into neighbouring paintings. As he leapt over the wreckage of armour, Harry heard more shouts and screams. Other people within the castle seemed to have awoken. He pelted towards a shortcut, hoping to overtake the brother and sister and close in on Snape and Malfoy, who must surely have reached the grounds by now. Remembering to leap the vanishing step halfway down the concealed staircase, he burst through a tapestry at the bottom and out into a corridor where a number of bewildered and pyjama-clad Hufflepuffs stood.
"Harry, we heard a noise and someone said something about the Dark Mark," began Ernie Macmillan.
"Out of the way!"
yelled Harry, knocking two boys aside as he sprinted towards the landing and down the remainder of the marble staircase. The oak front doors had been blasted open. There were smears of blood on the flagstones, and several terrified students stood huddled against the walls, one or two still cowering with their arms over their faces. The giant Gryffindor hourglass had been hit by a curse, and the rubies within were still falling with a loud rattle onto the flagstones below. Harry flew across the entrance hall and out into the dark grounds. He could just make out three figures racing across the lawn, heading for the gates beyond which they could disapparate. By the looks of them, the huge blonde Death Eater and, some way ahead of him, Snape and Malfoy. The cold night air ripped at Harry's lungs as he tore after them. He saw a flash of light in the distance that momentarily silhouetted his quarry. He did not know what it was, but continued to run, not yet near enough to get a good aim with a curse. Another flash, shouts, retaliatory jets of light, and Harry understood. Hagrid had emerged from his cabin and was trying to stop the Death Eaters escaping, and though every breath seemed to shred his lungs and the stitch in his chest was like fire, Harry sped up as an unbidden voice in his head said, "Not Hagrid! Not Hagrid too!" Something caught Harry hard in the small of the back, and he fell forwards, his face smacking the ground, blood pouring out of both nostrils. He knew, even as he rolled over, his wand ready, that the brother and sister he had overtaken using his shortcut were closing in behind him.
"Impedimenta!"
he yelled as he rolled over again, crouching close to the dark ground. And miraculously his jinx hit one of them, who stumbled and fell, tripping up the other. Harry leapt to his feet and sprinted on after Snape. And now he saw the vast outline of Hagrid, illuminated by the light of the crescent moon, revealed suddenly from behind clouds. The blonde Death Eater was aiming curse after curse at the gamekeeper, but Hagrid's immense strength and the toughened skin he had inherited from his giantess mother seemed to be protecting him. Snape and Malfoy, however, were still running. They would soon be beyond the gates, able to disapparate. Harry tore past Hagrid and his opponent, took aim at Snape's back, and yelled, "Stupefy!" He missed. The jet of red light soared past Snape's head. Snape shouted, "Run, Draco!" and turned. 20 yards apart, he and Harry looked at each other before raising their wands simultaneously. "Cruis!" But Snape parried the curse, knocking Harry backwards off his feet before he could complete it. Harry rolled over and scrambled back up again as the huge Death Eater behind him yelled, "Incendio!" Harry heard an explosive bang and a dancing orange light spilled over all of them. Hagrid's house was on fire.
"Fangs in there, ye evil!"
Hagrid bellowed.
"Cruis!"
yelled Harry for the second time, aiming for the figure ahead, illuminated in the dancing firelight. But Snape blocked the spell again. Harry could see him sneering.
"No unforgivable curses from you, Potter!"
he shouted over the rushing of the flames, Hagrid's yells, and the wild yelping of the trapped fang.
"You haven't got the nerve or the ability.
Incast!
Harry roared, but Snape deflected the spell with an almost lazy flick of his arm.
Fight back!
Harry screamed at him.
Fight back, you cowardly! Coward, did you call me, Potter?
Shouted Snape.
Your father would never attack me unless it was 4-on-1. What would you call him, I wonder? Stupid!
Blocked again, and again, and again, until you learn to keep your mouth shut and your mind closed, Potter, sneered Snape, deflecting the curse once more.
Now come! He shouted at the huge Death Eater behind Harry. It is time to be gone, before the Ministry turns up. Impedi!
But before he could finish this jinx, excruciating pain hit Harry. He keeled over in the grass. Someone was screaming. He would surely die of this agony. Snape was going to torture him to death or madness.
No!
Roared Snape's voice, and the pain stopped as suddenly as it had started. Harry lay curled on the dark grass, clutching his wand and panting. Somewhere above him, Snape was shouting,
"Have you forgotten our orders? Potter belongs to the Dark Lord. We are to leave him. Go! Go!"
And Harry felt the ground shudder under his face as the brother and sister and the enormous Death Eater obeyed, running towards the gates. Harry uttered an inarticulate yell of rage. In that instant, he cared not whether he lived or died. Pushing himself to his feet again, he staggered blindly towards Snape, the man he now hated as much as he hated Voldemort himself.
Sectum!
Snape flicked his wand and the curse was repelled yet again. But Harry was mere feet away now, and he could see Snape's face clearly at last. He was no longer sneering or jeering. The blazing flames showed a face full of rage. Mustering all his powers of concentration, Harry thought.
Levy, no, Potter!
Screamed Snape. There was a loud bang, and Harry was soaring backwards, hitting the ground hard again, and this time his wand flew out of his hand. He could hear Hagrid yelling and Fang howling as Snape closed in and looked down on him where he lay, wandless and defenceless as Dumbledore had been. Snape's pale face, illuminated by the flaming cabin, was suffused with hatred, just as it had been before he had cursed Dumbledore.
"You dare use my own spells against me, Potter? It was I who invented them. I, the half-blood prince, and you'd turn my inventions on me like your filthy father, would you? I don't think so. No!"
Harry had dived for his wand. Snape shot a hex at it, and it flew feet away into the darkness and out of sight.
"Kill me, then!"
panted Harry, who felt no fear at all, but only rage and contempt.
"Kill me like you killed him, you coward!"
"Don't!" screamed Snape, and his face was suddenly demented, inhuman, as though he was in as much pain as the yelping, howling dog stuck in the burning house behind them.
"Call me coward!"
And he slashed at the air. Harry felt a white-hot, whip-like something hit him across the face and was slammed backwards into the ground. Spots of light burst in front of his eyes, and for a moment all the breath seemed to have gone from his body. Then he heard a rush of wings above him, and something enormous obscured the stars. Buckbeak had flown at Snape, who staggered backwards as the razor-sharp claws slashed at him. As Harry raised himself into a sitting position, his head still swimming from its last contact with the ground, he saw Snape running as hard as he could, the enormous beast flapping behind him and screeching as Harry had never heard him screech. Harry struggled to his feet, looking around groggily for his wand, hoping to give chase again, but even as his fingers fumbled in the grass, discarding twigs, he knew it would be too late. And sure enough, by the time he had located his wand, he turned, only to see the hippogriff circling the gates. Snape had managed to disapparate just beyond the school's boundaries.
"Hagrid,"
muttered Harry, still dazed, looking around.
"Hagrid!"
He stumbled towards the burning house as an enormous figure emerged from out of the flames, carrying Fang on his back. With a cry of thankfulness, Harry sank to his knees. He was shaking in every limb, his body ached all over, and his breath came in painful stabs.
"You're right, Harry! You're right! Speak to me, Harry!"
Hagrid's huge, hairy face was swimming above Harry, blocking out the stars. Harry could smell burnt wood and dog hair. He put out a hand and felt Fang's reassuringly warm and alive body quivering beside him.
"I'm all right," panted Harry. "Are you?"
"Course I am. Take more than that to finish me."
Hagrid put his hands under Harry's arms and raised him up with such force that Harry's feet momentarily left the ground before Hagrid set him upright again. He could see blood trickling down Hagrid's cheek from a deep cut under one eye, which was swelling rapidly.
"We should put out your house," said Harry. "The charm's Aguamenti."
"Knew it was summat like that,"
mumbled Hagrid, and he raised a smouldering pink flowery umbrella and said,
"Aguamenti!"
A jet of water flew out of the umbrella tip. Harry raised his wand arm, which felt like lead, and murmured, "Aguamenti," too. Together, he and Hagrid poured water on the house until the last flame was extinguished.
"It's not too bad," said Hagrid hopefully a few minutes later, looking at the smoking wreck. "Nothing Dumbledore won't be able to put right."
Harry felt a searing pain in his stomach at the sound of the name. In the silence and the stillness, horror rose inside him.
"Hagrid, I was binding up a couple of bow-truckle legs when I heard 'em coming," said Hagrid sadly, still staring at his wrecked cabin. "They'd have been burnt to twigs, poor little things."
"Hagrid."
"But what happened, Harry? I just saw them Death Eaters running down from the castle, but what the ruddy hell was Snape doing with them? Where has he gone? Was he chasing them?"
"He..." Harry cleared his throat. It was dry from panic and the smoke.
"Hagrid, he killed..."
"Killed?"
said Hagrid loudly, staring down at Harry.
"Snape killed? What are you on about, Harry?"
"Dumbledore," said Harry. "Snape killed Dumbledore."
Hagrid simply looked at him, the little of his face that could be seen, completely blank, uncomprehending.
"Dumbledore what, Harry?"
"He's dead. Snape killed him."
"Don't say that," said Hagrid roughly. "Snape killed Dumbledore? Don't be stupid, Harry. What's made you say that?"
"I saw it happen."
"You couldn't have."
"I saw it, Hagrid."
Hagrid shook his head. His expression was disbelieving but sympathetic, and Harry knew that Hagrid thought he had sustained a blow to the head, that he was confused, perhaps by the after-effects of a jinx.
"What must have happened was Dumbledore must have told Snape to go with them Death Eaters,"
Hagrid said confidently.
"I suppose he's got to keep his cover. Look, let's get you back up to the school. Come on, Harry."
Harry did not attempt to argue or explain. He was still shaking uncontrollably. Hagrid would find out soon enough. Too soon. As they directed their steps back towards the castle, Harry saw that many of its windows were lit now. He could imagine, clearly, the scenes inside, as people moved from room to room, telling each other that Death Eaters had got in, that the mark was shining over Hogwarts, that somebody must have been killed. The oak front doors stood open ahead of them, light flooding out onto the drive and the lawn. Slowly, uncertainly, dressing-gowned people were creeping down the steps, looking around nervously for some sign of the Death Eaters who had fled into the night. Harry's eyes, however, were fixed upon the ground at the foot of the tallest tower. He imagined that he could see a black, huddled mass lying in the grass there, though he was really too far away to see anything of the sort. Even as he stared wordlessly at the place where he thought Dumbledore's body must lie, however, he saw people beginning to move towards it.
"What are they all looking at?"
said Hagrid, as he and Harry approached the castle front, Fang keeping as close as he could to their ankles.
"What's that lying on the grass?"
Hagrid added sharply, heading now towards the foot of the astronomy tower, where a small crowd was congregating.
"See it, Harry? Right at the foot of the tower, under where the mark—" "Blimey, you don't think someone got thrown—"
Hagrid fell silent, the thought apparently too horrible to express aloud. Harry walked alongside him, feeling the aches and pains in his face and his legs where the various hexes of the last half an hour had hit him, though in an oddly detached way, as though somebody near him was suffering them. What was real and inescapable was the awful pressing feeling in his chest. He and Hagrid moved, dreamlike, through the murmuring crowd to the very front, where the dumbstruck students and teachers had left a gap. Harry heard Hagrid's moan of pain and shock, but he did not stop. He walked slowly forwards until he reached the place where Dumbledore lay, and crouched down beside him. Harry had known there was no hope from the moment that the body-bind curse Dumbledore had placed upon him lifted, known that it could have happened only because its caster was dead. But there was still no preparation for seeing him here, spread-eagled, broken, the greatest wizard Harry had ever, or would ever, meet. Dumbledore's eyes were closed. But for the strange angle of his arms and legs, he might have been sleeping. Harry reached out, straightened the half-moon spectacles upon the crooked nose, and wiped a trickle of blood from the mouth with his own sleeve. Then he gazed down at the wise old face and tried to absorb the enormous and incomprehensible truth that never again would Dumbledore speak to him. Never again could he help. The crowd murmured behind Harry. After what seemed like a long time, he became aware that he was kneeling upon something hard and looked down. The locket they had managed to steal so many hours before had fallen out of Dumbledore's pocket. It had opened, perhaps due to the force with which it had hit the ground. And although he could not feel more shock or horror or sadness than he felt already, Harry knew, as he picked it up, that there was something wrong. He turned the locket over in his hands. This was neither as large as the locket he remembered seeing in the pensieve, nor were there any markings upon it. No sign of the ornate S that was supposed to be Slytherin's mark. Moreover, there was nothing inside but for a scrap of folded parchment, wedged tightly into the place where a portrait should have been. Automatically, without really thinking about what he was doing, Harry pulled out the fragment of parchment, opened it, and read by the light of the many wands that had now been lit behind him, "To the Dark Lord, I know I will be dead long before you read this, but I want you to know that it was I who discovered your secret. I have stolen the real Horcrux, and intend to destroy it as soon as I can. I face death in the hope that when you meet your match, you will be mortal once more. R.A.B. Harry neither knew nor cared what the message meant. Only one thing mattered. This was not a Horcrux. Dumbledore had weakened himself by drinking that terrible potion for nothing. Harry crumpled the parchment in his hand, and his eyes burned with tears as behind him Fang began to howl. Chapter 29 The Phoenix Lament.
Come here, Harry.
No!
You can't stay here, Harry. Come on now.
No!
He did not want to leave Dumbledore's side. He did not want to move anywhere. Hagrid's hand on his shoulder was trembling. Then another voice said,
Harry, come on.
A much smaller and warmer hand had enclosed his and was pulling him upwards. He obeyed its pressure without really thinking about it. Only as he walked blindly back through the crowd did he realize, from a trace of flowery scent on the air, that it was Ginny who was leading him back into the castle. Incomprehensible voices battered him. Sobs and shouts and wails stabbed the night. But Harry and Ginny walked on, back up the steps into the entrance hall. Faces swam on the edges of Harry's vision. People were peering at him, whispering, wondering. And Gryffindor rubies glistened on the floor like drops of blood as they made their way towards the marble staircase.
"We're going to the hospital wing," said Ginny.
"I'm not hurt," said Harry.
"It's McGonagall's orders," said Ginny. "Everyone's up there. Ron and Hermione and Lupin and everyone."
Fear stirred in Harry's chest again. He had forgotten the inert figures he had left behind.
"Ginny, who else is dead?" "Don't worry. None of us." "But the Dark Mark. Malfoy said he stepped over a body."
"He stepped over Bill. But it's all right. He's alive." There was something in her voice, however, that Harry knew boded ill.
"Are you sure?" "Of course I'm sure. He's a bit of a mess, that's all. Greyback attacked him. Madame Pomfrey says he won't look the same any more."
Ginny's voice trembled a little.
"We don't really know what the after effects will be. I mean, Greyback being a werewolf, but not transformed at the time. But the others, there were other bodies on the ground. Neville's in the hospital wing, but Madame Pomfrey thinks he'll make a full recovery, and Professor Flitwick was knocked out, but he's all right, just a bit shaky. He insisted on going off to look after the Ravenclaws. And a Death Eater's dead. He got hit by a killing curse. The huge blonde one was firing off everywhere. Harry, if we hadn't had your Felix potion, I think we'd all have been killed. But everything seemed to just miss us."
They had reached the hospital wing. Pushing open the doors, Harry saw Neville lying, apparently asleep, in a bed near the door. Ron, Hermione, Luna, Tonks and Lupin were gathered around another bed near the far end of the ward. At the sound of the doors opening, they all looked up. Hermione ran to Harry and hugged him. Lupin moved forwards too, looking anxious.
"Are you all right, Harry?"
"I'm fine. How's Bill?"
Nobody answered. Harry looked over Hermione's shoulder and saw an unrecognizable face lying on Bill's pillow, so badly slashed and ripped that he looked grotesque. Madame Pomfrey was dabbing at his wounds with some harsh-smelling green ointment. Harry remembered how Snape had mended Malfoy's Sectum Sempra wound so easily with his wand.
"Can't you fix them with a charm or something?" he asked the matron.
"No charm will work on these," said Madame Pomfrey.
I've tried everything I know, but there is no cure for werewolf bites."
"But he wasn't bitten at the full moon," said Ron, who was gazing down into his brother's face as though he could somehow force him to mend just by staring. "Greyback hadn't transformed, so surely Bill won't be a real..." He looked uncertainly at Lupin.
"No, I don't think that Bill will be a true werewolf," said Lupin. "But that does not mean that there won't be some contamination. Those are cursed wounds. They are unlikely ever to heal fully. And
Bill might have some wolfish characteristics from now on." "Dumbledore might know something that'll work, though," Ron said. "Where is he? Bill fought those maniacs on Dumbledore's orders. Dumbledore owes him. He can't leave him in this state."
"Ron, Dumbledore's dead," said Ginny.
"No!"
Lupin looked wildly from Ginny to Harry, as though hoping the latter might contradict her. But when Harry did not, Lupin collapsed into a chair beside Bill's bed, his hands over his face. Harry had never seen Lupin lose control before. He felt as though he was intruding upon something private, indecent. He turned away and caught Ron's eye instead, exchanging in silence a look that confirmed what Ginny had said.
"How did he die?"
whispered Tonks.
"How did it happen?"
"Snape killed him," said Harry. "I was there. I saw it. We arrived back on the astronomy tower because that's where the mark was. Dumbledore was ill. He was weak, but I think he realized it was a trap when we heard footsteps running up the stairs. He immobilized me. I couldn't do anything. I was under the invisibility cloak. And then Malfoy came through the door and disarmed him." Hermione clapped her hands to her mouth, and Ron groaned. Luna's mouth trembled. "More Death Eaters arrived, and then Snape. And Snape did it. The Avada Kedavra." Harry couldn't go on. Madame Pomfrey burst into tears. Nobody paid her any attention except Ginny, who whispered,
"Shh! Listen!"
Gulping, Madame Pomfrey pressed her fingers to her mouth, her eyes wide. Somewhere, out in the darkness, a phoenix was singing in a way Harry had never heard before, a stricken lament of terrible beauty. And Harry felt, as he had felt about phoenix song before, that the music was inside him, not without. It was his own grief, turned magically to song, that echoed across the grounds and through the castle windows. How long they all stood there, listening, he did not know, nor why it seemed to ease their pain a little to listen to the sound of their mourning. But it felt like a long time later that the hospital door opened again, and Professor McGonagall entered the ward. Like all the rest, she bore marks of the recent battle. There were grazes on her face, and her robes were ripped.
"Molly and Arthur are on their way," she said,
and the spell of the music was broken. Everyone roused themselves as though coming out of trances, turning again to look at Bill, or else to rub their own eyes, shake their heads.